And yeah, I mean, it definitely did start as a passion project, but we very quickly learnt that we weren't going to sustain ourselves if it remained simply a passion project.
Welcome back to The Business Behind Your Business. Once again, I'm your host, Paul Sweeney, and we're continuing our series on business startups, or why you'd want to start your business and what are the secrets for successfully starting and maintaining a profitable business. Now, last week I talked about how you know, passion and skill alone are not going to be enough for a successful business. So skill, like as in a particular skill, like, you know, you might be good at baking, but are you going to have a successful cake business? That's not necessarily the case. Now, today I am really fortunate and I'm really thrilled, actually, because I love talking to these two ladies, actually clients of mine. So there is a bit of a disclosure there. They are clients of mine, but I want to talk to them specifically because these are a perfect example of ladies that have got passion, highly skilled, and have turned that into a very successful business. So today I have Christine and Sharon Muscat, and those names might be familiar, but they'll probably be more familiar as sister to sister, which a bit of a flashback here for me is I first heard them on the radio many years ago. And if anybody told me back then that I would be interviewing them for a business podcast in the future, nobody knew what a podcast was. So they've been around for a while, but you will still see them from time to time. I'm going to read their bio before we introduce them because it's actually quite extensive and give you a picture of their story, and I'll get them to elaborate on that a bit more. So industry veterans, they're still quite young. So industry veterans, they've been in the industry for a long time. They began their music careers as recording artists, and they had deals worldwide with Mushroom, Sony, Columbia Records in their early teens, toured extensively over 25 countries to promote the release of their self-penned music. Thousands of performances and promotional appearances, multi-platinum releases, won an ARIA award, which looks very nice hanging in the studio. And you've been on the road with Britney Spears on Oops, I Did It Again World Tour 2000. And you also shared the stage with London at Wembley, New York's Madison Square Garden, Sydney's Entertainment Centre. That seems a bit of a step down from those two venues. Freelance session vocalist based in Sydney. You're both on television and film, and we regularly see you on television, actually, or in the background, probably. You've been on a lot of recordings, countless recordings, tours and live performances with some of these artists, and these will all be familiar: Boy George, Guy Sebastian, Macklemore, Vance Joy, Jessica Mauboy, Ben Lee, Leo Sayer, Human Nature, Anthony Kalia, Michael Bolton, and you've just wrapped up an Australian-wide tour with Delta Goodrum. This is all very exciting, very exciting. So
it's very exciting.
You make us sound so fancy.
Yeah. We were just quiet then thinking, wow, that sounds pretty impressive. But you're more impressive, Paul.
Oh, thank you. But look, you've had quite a long journey, and I guess the key here is that there's more to just being passionate about what you do. And obviously you are, because I know you, and that comes through in everything that you do. And you are highly skilled and your services are highly sought after. But there's more to coming from a performing artist to actually running a business. Now, we can talk a bit more about your business, but what is the business that you have at the moment?
So our sister-to-sister school of singing, we founded it in 2004. So that is 18 years ago this year, which is crazy. And, yeah, I mean, it definitely did start as a passion project, but we very quickly learnt that we weren't going to sustain ourselves if it remained simply a passion project. And yeah, it's been 18 years. So we do singing lessons, we have guitar, piano, drum, saxophone, bass lessons, we do drama, musical theatre, we have concerts at the end of every term, we have a small recording facility in our studios, we do songwriting, we do
artist development.
And it's just a great hub of talented kids and adults and performing artists that come and visit us in our studios or online.
It's not intimidating. Like, we have really young up and coming students, but then we have adults that are just mums and dads that want to come and have a sing. So what we love is that we've created a community that allows people to come and do what they love without any judgment, which is brilliant.
Yeah, and look, you're obviously very excited about this and you've been managing it for 18 years, which is a long time for any business owner. And given that many businesses don't even survive the first 3 years, that's an incredible story. So the question is, why go from being successful performing artist to running a music school?
Yeah, great question.
Great question.
Especially at how old were we, Sharon?
Yeah, I mean, I was 19 when we opened the school.
21.
So we were really, really young. And I think the thing to remember is that, you know, our singing careers, even today as vocalists, they are mini businesses amongst themselves in a sense that, yes, there's skill and there's passion and all those things, but also they need constant driving and persistence and perseverance. And when you finish an album and you're really successful, I'm not just talking about us, I'm saying in general, any
you're really, so humble, Sharon.
Yeah,
you're
not the humble sister. Any successful recording artist will tell you that, you know, at the height of one project, what's coming next is, you know, the bottom of the climb for the next.
And I guess always realistic of that too.
Yeah, we are very family orientated. We are, as much as I don't sound it, we are actually quite down to earth. And after we'd done so much touring and really most of our teams working really, really hard, loving every second of it, it was also really nice to come home and settle a little bit in the hills before going into what we thought was going to be the next album and the next phase. But of course,
the world just dragged us in different directions.
Yeah. And also, you know, like so many tales, there's issues, you know, behind the scenes with, you know, business management and record labels. And there's every artist has got a story. And at that point in our story, rather than starting at the bottom with another record label, it really, our passion just took us in a different direction and we started teaching.
And I think the key is too for us is that we never wanted to be famous.
Yeah.
That's it. That's really it. We just loved singing and music and anything that came with that. So we really did get a lot of enjoyment from you know, getting out of singing our songs and actually getting out there and as performers just performing. And when we started backing vocals, people would be like, "What? Gosh, what a backstep, you know, you're backing up artists. Shouldn't you be up front?" We're like, oh my gosh, we're having a ball. Like clearly, because we're still doing it 17 years late. And even with the teaching, seeing those kids and giving them what we didn't have growing up as such, because obviously research and development and stuff with music and singing teaching wasn't as amazing as it is now. So we really wanted to fill that gap. And gosh, when we started to see the kids see us as someone important in their life, apart from even just the singing, I think that kind of drove us too. It gave us a little bit more than just singing teaching.
Yeah, so, wow, 19 and 21, starting a business.
yep.
If my 19-year-old son, who is going to be listening to this podcast, when he hears this and he just tells me he's going to start a business, I'm going to think, well, really, should you be starting a business at so young? But what did you find difficult about it? Did you find that the fact that you were so young was a barrier to a lot of people, or did you just have
the youth? What was hard was the inexperience, because we did come into it with passion and skill, and then we were like, hang on a second, I have to talk to like clients that are not happy right now. I have to talk to parents. I have to like, you know,
do my tax.
Do invoices. Like, what do you mean invoices? Like,
I have to reconcile.
Just taking cash and, like, you know, and we just had it. I know this sounds really silly, but in the beginning, we just had them in a little tin and we just.
Then we'd go to the bank and we'd bank our cash and.
Yeah.
And we'd just say, oh, yeah, we think everyone's paid.
Like, you know, it was really bizarre.
I think, you know, and I'm sure that you would, well, maybe you wouldn't appreciate this, but I think too that if you wait to have all the business acumen before you start a business, then who's going to start a business, really? And I also do know a lot of people who are business mentors who maybe do have a lot of that skill on paper and theory, but haven't necessarily been able to find a product that for themselves that they can apply in that. So I think it takes a lot of things. And if you're going to be, you know, 19 or even younger now. I mean, there are so many students of ours who are 14, 15, 16, and with the online space doing what it's doing and, you know, all the different platforms and coding and, you know, and the list goes on. You don't have to be 22, 25, have a business degree to start a business anymore. You just simply don't. So, you know, for us at that age, it was just, it felt like a natural progression. It also felt like we would hit a stumbling block and then we would figure out how to fix it. And those stumbling blocks could be in the form of each other, you know.
Which was massive.
Which was probably more often than not. You know, two different girls in their 20s navigating life and running a business together. They could have been, you know, financial stuff where we're, you know, we're managing our books and not sure what we're doing. It could have been marketing stuff. It could have been, you know, customer service. And then as you run into those issues, you just kind of go, well, how do we fix this? And we're both pretty problem solving focused people. We are resilient in that sense. When an issue comes up, we just want to understand it so that we can fix it. And that's never a problem for us. Nothing's ever a really huge deal. We're just like, cool, issue. How do we fix this?
It's bad, but now what? Like,
yeah.
And of course, when you started, like, say, 2004, the internet is really still in its infancy. I'm not even sure if Google was around. There were other ways of searching, but the amount of information available online certainly wasn't there. And accounting systems and a lot of the tools that businesses use today didn't exist back then, particularly for small business. So you were having to do a lot of manual processes and having to learn. And I guess accessibility to those resources probably wasn't the same as it is now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not even close. But also being that it was just us when we started, there wasn't an admin team. You know, there wasn't accounts. There wasn't any of those things. We had to figure out how to do everything in the business ourselves and not stuff it up.
Yeah. That's right. And look, our dad had we grew up in a family business and they had a delicatessen in Merrylands. And so we did grow up in a business environment, you know, but I think in the beginning we were quite lucky because we did live with our parents. So obviously funding and things like that were our parents, you know, it was our parents that, you know, we were able to live with them and you know, kind of be able to not take any money for probably a year or so.
Yeah. I'm going to say that it was probably 18 months.
Yeah. Maybe even more.
Where we worked nonstop. This was what, so when we first started the business, we operated out of a community center. And so we just paid a higher fee. We bought two keyboards and two cassette little players because that's what it was then. And if we wanted lyrics, if we wanted, you know, chords for a song or lyrics or to play a song, we had to print the sheet music, print the lyrics prior to even getting there. We had to learn how to play it. Nothing like now where we can just, you know, we've got all the resources.
Yeah, YouTube, karaoke version, please. Like, you
know. Everything's just there. And it was a total different time. It was crazy.
But I think because we were young too, I think that helped with all the, let's say, the social media as an example. We kind of did grow with it. So it wasn't like we were probably in our 30s and 40s like we are now. And if social media was to come up now, we may be a little bit like, can't deal with that.
Yeah, and you know? I think the turning point for us to where it really became a business was after we were operating out of the community center, we were like, okay, we have dreams now beyond being one-on-one with these kids, teaching them to sing. We want to offer community. We want to offer them a space that's theirs. We want to offer them the ability to collaborate and be in a room with 20 other kids. We can't do that in this community center. So when we found premises, which we were going to buy at first, which I'm really glad we didn't, because if we bought those premises, we wouldn't have the business we have now. It wasn't the right, I mean, look, financially, maybe it'd be better if we bought, but as far as
that
our business
goes. That didn't drive
us
for a while, though, did it?
No, that's right. And then so once we rented our premises and fit out that space, we had to invest money each. I think at the time it was about $20,000 each from our personal pockets, of course. And we fit out the premises, we got started, and we had to convince, obviously, an agent and convince everybody that we were going to be able to service, you know, this liability that we had just taken on. Which I remember doing, you know, Excel spreadsheets, you know, and forecasting and not really knowing.
No, at all. Like at you all. Would not have known.
You know, someone saying, oh, can you do a forecast? Because I actually also, this is Sharon, I also left school in year nine. So my knowledge of Excel was not excelling.
It was not exceptional.
Yeah. So once we took on that liability, I think we didn't make any money. I'm going to say for 18 months, we always paid our bills. We always paid anybody who worked with us. That was a priority. I don't think we were ever late on anything and never have been because we couldn't afford it. We always put
Paul's
ourselves.
Like, but hang on, maybe my bill. Now and then we send you a little overdue.
We never took on anything or anyone that we couldn't handle. But for as far as ourselves, like Christine said, if we didn't live with our parents, we probably wouldn't have been able to, you know, start it. But then quite quickly, I think we were able to start to make a bit of money, and that was a different dynamic altogether.
Yeah. So you had to come up with some forecasts and set some goals to convince people to rent to you. Was that the first time that you actually sat down and worked out some goals for what you wanted and what you were going to achieve in the business?
Yeah.
Yes. Prior to that, it wasn't skills and passion anymore. Now it was like, it's getting real. This business stuff's getting real.
Yeah. And we really needed to have a conversation, you know, as partners about the things that we did want to do if we took on these premises. And when you start to have those conversations, you realize that, well, I'm thinking some things and Christine's thinking some things. And then there were a lot of things that, yes, did diverge and we thought the same on, but there was also stuff that we didn't necessarily agree on. And then we had to obviously put that into paper and price things. And I remember having conversations about, oh, we really want to do this class because it would be so much fun. And that would be the first thing. And then the second thing was, what do we need to do it? Oh, we're going to have to get that teacher in. We're going to have to buy that gear. Oh, and then the third thing was, how are we going to cover costs for this amazing idea we've had? And then somewhere down the line, probably many years later, we started to think, we actually need to turn a profit so that we can keep offering these awesome things that we're doing that we believe in. If we don't turn a profit as we get older and we take on more responsibility in our lives, families and kids, we can't do the thing we love if we can't feed ourselves. So yeah.
So how did you resolve some of those disagreements that you would have had? And this is something that every business owner has. Yep.
It's the relentless importance that it was never an option that we weren't going to make it work. We're sisters. So it was I think it was the family situation where we're like, we have to make this work. Like, I'm telling you now, we wouldn't last. I don't think we would have lasted if we were friends.
No.
I would have been done with you ages ago and vice versa.
You would just be here now.
But this is the thing. You kind of, you notice and you realize that it's because your family, and I don't know if this is with everybody else, but it was like that for us, that it just wasn't an option not to succeed together. So, and I think what's so great is all the arguments. That's what's so great, because in collaboration, that's where, you know, exceptional things happen.
Yeah.
Right? It's much better than one person. And I feel like while we are brought up the same, while people often think we are quite similar people, we are in a way at the core, but then we are very different. So we approach things differently. And I feel like that because of that, all the obstacles and all of the wonderful things that we create and do, we bring our, it's like we cover all bases.
Yeah,
I feel like we'd be, you know, crap people separately, but we make one really good person together, you know.
So you've each got some different skills in running the business, which comes out very clearly when we talk to you. So that leads into another question. Like, you've both got some personal skills. Now, growing the business, though, how are you able to grow the business? Because you just two people, you're only capable of doing so much. How did you grow the business?
So when you say grow, there's a lot of ways to grow. You mm-hmm. can have a lot of products or services and not necessarily be making a lot of money. That's one way to grow. And then grow is obviously when we're speaking about actual business, actually looking at the bottom line and how do we get this to a place that sustains both of us in a really good way. So I'm going to talk about the second one because that was a real turning point for us. A really important part of our journey was realizing that, like Christine said, in the creative side of things and in our business, we are very different, but we together are really confident in that we can put up a great class.
And I don't think we've ever seen, you know what, in terms of like where we want the business to go, when you really think about it, we haven't actually not agreed, right?
No.
Yeah. So like the long-term goals actually have always been aligned. It's just how
we get there.
Get there has been the issue. Which I guess is probably our weakness, but our strength, because again, we're able to
so
cover all bases. Anyway, go keep going, Sharon.
To grow in specific ways, you need help, and you need to know. First, you need to identify like this is an area that we're a little bit out of our depth at this point. When your turnover is X, and the liability is X, and you've got X amount of clients that you can manage, that's fine. But if you do want to grow, and you're talking about having a business double the size, you need help. So being able to recognize in the first place that you need help, and second of all, being able to seek that out is really important. And for us, that was a turning point.
And also too, I think, is when we're saying, you know, obviously making money is important in a business, you do have to do that, of course, but I feel like we've never had that as the driving force of any service we give or provide or whatever. So I feel like that at least when it is being presented, it's being presented not like a money grab. It's being presented like it's actually something of value that you know, they want and they can see we really want. So that helps too. But also, I feel like very quickly we realized that our environment and our community, it was always very much word of mouth when we got new business. So we kind of started to latch onto that and latch onto the, you know, the core of our business being community-based. So when social media did start, I mean, we're still not great with social media. I know, Paul, you say that you think we are. We're really not. Like, we're really not. And it's a big, we've really got to kind of, you know, that's something we want to work on. But we understand that it is the community that creates all of that business. And we've kind of leaned into that. So I think that's what grew the business for us, is understanding that word of mouth and that community is what's enticing. And then, of course, yes, the experience, the professionalism, all that kind of offerings. But at the core of it, I think it's that draws people to us first.
You've actually raised a few really good points there. So I just want to touch on them. You mentioned the whole idea of you have to have something that people value when you're selling a product or a service to them. If they don't value it, they're not going to purchase it. So there's obviously a way of creating value. And you've really got that community. You've got that, I guess the fanatic fans that will follow you, that will do those, you know, jump on board, whether those extra services, the squads and you know, the programs that you're doing. But and that's a key to success. And I think I can't remember the name of the theory, but the majority of your business comes from that really core group of followers, and they are the ones that will go out of their way, and they will promote you, and they will turn up to all of your events. And
to cut you off then for a second too, like now that particular, you know, service is profitable, but for many, many years, our performance group was not, because we would be doing it out of love. Rehearsals would be free. We wouldn't charge for the rehearsals. We would go to all the shows. We would, you know, create all these things. And we would always say, like,
patience.
Yeah. So over time, it did become profitable for a very long time. You know, it was very much because we really wanted it and they really wanted it. And we just, you know, and then that grew from organic, natural, you know, love for what we do and for what they want.
Yeah. And look, obviously, there's a couple of other things, but like, now, how many employed or singers or teachers, and not just singing, because you do instruments as well and dance. How many people do you have working for you? So growing the business, obviously you're offering more classes and options than what you can physically teach yourselves. How have you grown a number of teachers, and what are some of the things that you've learned about employing other people?
I would say that employing teachers and staff in general is probably the steepest learning curve for us. And one of our greatest strengths in our school is our team, but also, you know, one of our greatest challenges. And I think we're in a pretty good place now with it. But at first, being that it's the sister-to-sister school of singing and we're the sisters, it was really difficult to introduce other staff members because, again, people really saw that value in having classes with us. And still to this day, we assess every single student that comes through the school because we want to see them. We want to, you know, assign them their classes. We don't just want them to book in any class with us at any cost. And so sometimes they do say, oh, we really want a class with you. But very quickly they realize that we've built this really strong team, but that's taken a long time to get to that point. So yeah, at first, very difficult.
It's obviously still maintaining, you know, Sharon and I need to, you know, continuously professionally develop, whether it be on the business and, you know, as performers, and present ourselves in a way that, you know, we still keep ourselves current in our industry, whether it be study or whether it be performance. But then also too, highlighting all our students, highlighting all of our teachers and their special traits that they do. And then on top of that, which helps our cause, meaning bringing other people in under our apparent brand, that's the draw card, is the fact that most of them we've been teaching since they were 7, 8, 9 years old. We're talking like 15 years worth of still students, but they've got, you know, degrees and they're professionals in their own right, but they're still getting lessons from us. And we can sell that this teacher you're having, I still teach them And they've been at the school since day one, or they've been at the school for a decade. Like, they're like, oh, great. You know, so there's still that connection.
What we hear too, and what we've heard from other people when they have assessments, is that there can really be a lack of continuity in other schools and a lack of commitment. You know, the teacher's away, the teachers do, and, or one teacher taught me this and another teacher taught me something else. So they come to us because they're looking for that continuity. And I'm really confident that they get that from us. And we've got about 18 teachers at the moment. And like Christine said, all of them do have lessons with us. Some of them have been with us having classes since 2004 when we absolutely started. Some have been 5 years, some have been 6 years. So that's one piece of what we look for when we're taking on a singing teacher, is that they technically, they don't have to be vocal scientists. We're certainly not. We've got, you know, speech pathologists and ENTs and people that we work with, but we do not profess to have their knowledge or their qualifications. So our teachers don't profess to have ours after teaching for 20 years, but they certainly, there is a continuity in training there. So there's that.
That was what the point I was going to say.
There you go.
Yeah, fantastic, Sharon.
And the second part is that, you know, we want to see that they're performing. We want to see that they're not just singing in their bedrooms beautifully with great technique, but they're actually applying that on stages in front of audiences and having to, you know, be able to offer that to their students as well. And then the third thing is, are they seeking out that formal qualification? So we've got, you know, one teacher's doing a speech pathology course, another is doing, you know, studying at the Con, doing a vocal jazz course. So we want to see that they're also pursuing music as a career. And between those three things, if we can see an 18-year-old student of ours who's finished school, who's been with us for 10 years, who says, I want to teach, and they're seeking out gigs, they're looking at studying music next year for us, that's a beautiful, beautiful thing for us.
And look, in as you mentioned, different teachers have different ways of teaching and styles, and a lot of your teachers have come through the school. Is there a process by which you train them to deliver their teaching and their, I guess, tutoring in a different, in a specific way that is the sister-to-sister way?
Well, we did develop, it was called the Teacher Development Program, which all of the students, all of the teachers that are teaching now did, they were part of that starting off, because before they got their degrees, we wanted to make sure that, you know, they had the support as well. So it wasn't just about, you know, about the client in front of them. It was supporting them as their mentors. And so along the way, we did have a full session planned for them. We had regular meetings together at teacher development. So we would bring in, you know, ENTs. We would bring in other teachers just to kind of discuss things and have that open learning. So questions, any trouble they have, and we'd go into each other's rooms. And so that was a very big part of it. But obviously that kind of stopped, because now those teachers are qualified and they're experienced. They've been doing it for 5-10 years now at the school. But, you know, Sharon and I are starting to see now that we are bringing on those newer ones that are just starting their degree, where they're not fully qualified, and we need to support them the same.
And the crazy thing is now is that, yes, we have those conversations and we work with them, but some of those teachers who were part of our so-called, you know, teacher development program 10 years ago, now what we do is we pair up the brand new 18-year-old, 19-year-old teachers with our 28, 29-year-old teachers who've been with us for that long and have them as mentors. And then we're the 38-year-old directors who are kind of there at any time for them. So it's organic. There is some structure in place there, but it's also organic, because mm-hmm. we don't put anyone forward. It's not, we have hundreds of students coming through our school, and if you're going to teach with us, it's not something that we take on lightly. It's someone who possesses all those things, but also the personality is personable. You know, they have the work ethic as well. So they're seeking out those opportunities, not just with Christine and I, but with the other teachers in the school.
We did learn the hard way when we would hire and outsource. You know, someone would come through via email, sending us their bio, and it'd be beautiful. It'd be amazing. We'd go, wow, that degree, wow, this, you know, wow. And then they'd come in and, you know, just wouldn't connect with our students, can't connect with the community. And you know, it's one thing, you know, formal qualifications is extraordinarily important, and we value that individually as well as our teachers. But it, you know, there's more to it than
that. It's a recipe.
There's more to it than that, to connect with people and to teach people and to understand them. And it's a lot more.
And I think expanding on that a little bit, as business owners hiring people, when you ask about the challenges of hiring, understanding too that this school is not just our business and our income and our livelihood, it is our life. It's been 18 years. And
you know what? It's our teachers' lives too.
I was actually going to say the opposite. What I was going to say is for me, I think understand for them, this is a part of, it might be a part of their journey. And this is looking back, not on the teachers we have now, because right now you're 100% right. It's a part of their lives.
They have their own lives. But I'm saying, like, for them, it's like, it's almost like we're an auntie or an uncle
yes,
to them.
On a personal level, yes.
Yeah, that's, and
I agree.
It's like.
But on a business level, over 18 years, I can see that, you know, we are a part of their journey, and there is this sweet spot of time which may last 2 years, it might last 5 years, it might have been the whole 18, where everybody is on the same page. We are fulfilling their needs as far as the community and the income that they need at the time, and they're fulfilling our needs. And sometimes they might have their own entrepreneurial dreams that manifest from working with us. They might want to start their own businesses. They might want to go off into other fields, and that's fine too. You know, it's not personal. I think when we were younger, we'd invest so much time in getting people to a point where they'd be great teachers finally, and then they'd go, we're going to go do this now. We would just be gutted. You know, we would be gutted. But, yeah, it's taken time. But we're in a good spot. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really, really critical what you've been talking about, is that you've not just got a process and a prescriptive way that you want things done, but you've actually meet with your teachers regularly, you develop them, and you reinforce those principles, those things that are really important to how you do your business.
Remember, when we started our business, we were young, so really they were – age-wise, they were our peers, right? So at first it was like, you know, we had to really kind of build respect, and it took time because we would be going out with them, but then we'd be their boss. It's crazy. It was never, I think, a problem, funny enough, because we crossed all business boundaries in terms of hierarchy and all the rest of it, all of them. But yet still till this day, and even back then, we had their respect. And in hindsight now, looking back, I feel like, and what we do now is we want to lead by example. And you can't tell somebody, I'm your boss, you need to, you know, respect me. It's like, it's earned. Even you can't just think because you have the position, then you've got the power. You only have the power if you're actually leading by, you know,
and
by
anyone,
example.
I think anyone who owns a business, I feel like it's the other way around. You know, we only have a business because we're not at home doing it on our own. We're not teaching a student in our living room. We have a business because we have staff who put their time and effort into our business so that we can say we have one. So, you know, we see it the other way around. I don't feel like they work for us. I feel like, you know, we work for them, and it's beautiful.
Oh, it's great. Look, I think there's so many lessons in here for anybody starting a business or anybody running a business now, but I want to ask, if you had to go back and start your business again, knowing what you know now, would there be anything you did differently?
It's like sliding doors. You know, I can't say that I would, because there is just things could have taken us. And we, even to this day, when we get together, you know, even just catching up as sisters for a coffee, we can't not start talking about school things. And we write, if I had to write down now, there's about 10 major ideas and projects that we have
like
in our minds
that if we were able
that we haven't that we haven't actioned yet, and we may never action. And that would be the same for last year, the year before, and so on and so forth. So if we were to do things differently, would we be somewhere else? Yeah. Would that be better than where we are now? Who knows? So would you do anything differently?
No, I wouldn't do anything differently. No, because we're here now and we're still, you know, and we're happy.
And you always have a choice. You know, I never feel like we're stuck in where we are and what we're doing. If we wanted to change direction or we wanted a different outcome, we would go and seek that now. So,
do you know what's kind of cool? It's like what, like you were saying, we have all of these kind of, you know, ideas, and we do with this, there's plenty. And it's almost like over the years, I feel like this is what we do. We talk about stuff, and then in a month later, we'll talk about that one again. And then, you know, again, and it's like we're back and forth, and suddenly the world, whatever, our feelings, our clients, suddenly then we're like, oh, this will work now, and then we kind of do it. So, you know, I really believe it's collaboration, and then on top of that, I believe it's collaboration with family, which is bizarrely the strength, because most people go, don't start a business with your family, you know.
Which we, as difficult as it has been at times, we would totally disagree with. We would say definitely start a business with your family. You know, I think, yeah, no, I'm sticking to it. I wouldn't do anything different.
Yep. No, we're here.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
So is there any advice that you would have liked to have somebody to have given you early on in that journey?
Probably business advice, yes. Like a little bit more like structure, like, you know, because we were just kind of
flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah, like it was an absolute minestrone.
It was like, it. Look,
really?
No, I don't think it. We probably feel like it was more, I mean, yeah, than, maybe, more than it
maybe
was.
Maybe we were doing
it. We've done all right because we're here now, so it can't be too bad. But as far as advice, I don't think. I think my advice would be more for outside the school stuff. It'd be stuff in our personal lives. It'd be stuff in our singing careers. It'd be stuff, you know, I think what I would say maybe is for us to be kinder to each other and to remember that there's two women here, young women at the time, going through life, figuring out love, starting families, you know, having personal goals and these kinds of things. And I don't think we cut each other enough slack through those years. We were pretty demanding of each other's attention, time, and dedication. So, and I think that at times we probably still, you know, fall victim to that mentality.
But it also kept us on our toes.
But it also kept us on our toes. There's yeah. always, look, there's
always two
sides.
You've got to show up for someone.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to show up for someone.
There's always two sides. But I think, yeah, maybe just, I think maturity, but that's just come with time for one of us more than the other.
Healthy conflict or healthy disagreements at times, that's great. Earlier on in our conversation today that you couldn't just wait until everything was perfect before you started. And I hear that a lot, is that I'm waiting for everything to be perfect. Now, a lot of people look at you and say, hey, well, you've got all of this hype and interest being generated by shows like The Voice and Australian Idol and Australia's Got Talented, all of those types of shows highlighting musical talent and inspiring people. But when you started the business, that environment wasn't there. So how did you generate, I guess, the interest in your singing school when there wasn't that external driver of traffic to you naturally?
I think we were lucky in the sense that we had and still have something quite unique over our competitors. And what that is it's not just, you know, people say that most teachers, right, I'll just say most teachers teach because they can't do, right? You know, most. But for Sharon and I, we were at the height of our careers.
At that point.
So our lack of business knowledge, our skill and in our profession and the level of where we were at the time outweighed our lack of business knowledge. And I feel that that's what kind of made it successful for a period of time. But then we were smart enough to know that that's not enough. That's not enough as singing teachers because we need to give our students more. And it wasn't enough as business owners because we needed to take the business further. So I think it was just having that edge. And I believe that's still what sets us apart, even this, you know, far away. Yet, no, it wasn't a second album for us, but we're still current in the industry.
They were seeing us perform. They were seeing us do what they aspired to do. And even though in those days, yeah, you didn't have Instagram and those things where you there wasn't those shows, they could see it in us. And, yeah, like Chrissy said.
We gave them hope that there's still, and they say it now after some students that have been with us 15 years, they say that when they see us, it gives them hope that in the industry, in the music industry, there's longevity. There is longevity if you're able to be versatile and you're able to kind of, and also not have an ego. I feel like that's a big thing. And I mean, I think we've got quite big egos, but, you know, we're okay to kind of do something different and be okay with the fact that it's like, no, it's not a second album, but look, we're still getting paid to sing and do what we do at a professional level. That's awesome. And to go back to, you know, we kind of say this to our young up and coming artists. They feel sometimes we're like, just put stuff out there. Don't wait for it to be perfect. And they're like, what? You know, I'm like, because at the end of the day, you'll never release anything. So just put it out there. You've got the luxury these days with Spotify and all these social media outlets. It's like, just put it out there and slowly but surely something will stick. And that's how that's our advice to our students as well.
And I've seen a number of your students actually, you know, publishing their material and you've been quite supportive of that. I can see that quite regularly. Look, if you're a student, I must admit that if I was a student and I saw you performing on stage with Delta Goodrum, I'd have to think, hey, I've got the best teacher in the world. That's got to be a buzz. There's got to be a buzz for
it. It's great. The thing that's great, though, I think, in hindsight, again, is that that is one really exciting aspect. And for some people, that's all they need to think we're the best in the world. But we don't for us, that's one, it's like what we want from our teachers. We want our teachers to be performing. We want them to be studying. We want for them to be teaching, you know, and that's, we expect the same things of ourselves. We are genuinely always in a cycle going, what is the next vocal technique? Or who are the professionals that we can seek out in this country and abroad so that we can keep being better singing teachers? So that's part of it too. And for some people, they actually don't care that we're on stage with Delta Goodrum. They care that we understand certain vocal techniques. So and the thing that's even more exciting to us now is that when I have a student come in that says to me, you know, I want to sing jazz, I love that I can say, you know what, that's really not my specialty, but one of my teachers who I've taught for many years is studying jazz at the Conservatorium of Music. Go and book classes with her. That makes me so happy. Or I want to be a songwriter. Great, I'm a songwriter, but I have this student of ours and teacher of ours who has a publishing deal with Warner, you know, go and have a lesson with them. So it's
Paul, let's be clear, when we're in our 50s, I mean, maybe we will want to be jumping up and down on stage with Delta Goodrum, but something tells me maybe somebody wouldn't want to see that. So yeah. I mean, you know, it's great, don't get me wrong, we're not minimizing it is great, we are very lucky.
You know, it's still a sacrifice for our students and for our teachers, mm-hmm. because while we're away looking like we're killing the game, our teachers are carrying the load of all of our students while we're away. Our students are missing us in their classes. They might see us on Instagram and think it's cool, but when we haven't been there,
we got to come back.
Yeah, we got to come back and teach those kids and be there for them. So
it's a balancing act.
Yeah, look, but you, in saying that, I know that you've had time away from the business and you've recently been on that tour with Delta Goodrum, and you've achieved something that a lot of business owners don't ever achieve, and that is the ability to take time away from the business and the business still continues to operate. And you've done that by the way you've brought on your teachers, and you've developed the process and the system, and you've got the admin support, and the business can run. And you're still overseeing, because I know you are constantly in contact and available for the teachers, and you're constantly communicating throughout that period. So, but you've designed your business and it operates in such a way that, you know, if one of you was to have a month off, the business would still go strongly and still continue to operate.
Yeah.
And that's a great achievement.
Look, it is, and we need that flexibility in our lives because we still want to be professional singers. If something does come up, we want to go and do it. Plus, we've got families. I mean, I had 3 months off to go and have a baby last year. Christine's got 2 kids. We want that flexibility, and it's important. But, again, what we've also learned is that it's you can never put the burden of business ownership on an employee, and you
as
can't
much as
have
they love you as much as they
you can't have you know, expectations of them as you would have on yourself. So yes, we've got systems, processes in place, and we've got great remote admin staff, we've got great team, great teachers. Things I think do run very well when we're not there, but
we don't want them to feel like dumping it on them.
But if something happens, you know, there's an issue, or you know, and just something that as simple as, you know, if there is a complaint or something, double booking or whatever, we never pull away from our responsibility, even if we are away. It's still our business, and it's not for us to dump on anybody else. I wonder what they would say while we were away. They probably put out a bunch of fires on their own because they're so great.
I think feel like in the halls, it's just not as motivating for them. You know, they do
the,
as much.
Are you
as
saying that we're the life of the party, Christine?
They're also the life of the party for us. I remember being in lockdown, and I was there teaching by myself. I was almost like, I don't even know I want to keep doing this. This is, you know, because a big part of my drive to teach is our community, and vice versa for them. Mm. So yeah, I think that's. We like each other. We like working together.
That's good. Look, I don't think we can finish the conversation without talking about the big C word. And you've already mentioned about having to be versatile. So the big C word came and you were forced into lockdown and, you know, no face-to-face lessons. So how did you change the business so that you could continue to offer the services and support to your teachers and your students throughout COVID?
Yeah, well, the first thing we
happened
did was
overnight.
Yeah, the first thing is we blew up the business. We literally sat together and we were like, doing what we're doing the way we're doing, we can't do. So as of now, we don't have a business. We can't teach these kids face-to-face.
We also went to doomsday. We were driven by the fact that we thought our teachers and our kids are never going to step foot in this office again.
We were in tears for a moment.
Because we're thinking we're doing this and we're keeping our smiling faces, but it's not going to happen. They're actually not coming back.
It's done. We blew it up. And then when the dust settled after the explosion of thinking we're getting out of our lease, we're closing our business, we saw some opportunities. Things like, you know, even to this day, we've got students from interstate, from overseas, and we've got students that have opted to stay online. So that's really become a business opportunity for us. And the thing that I'm most proud of, going to toot our little horn here, the thing that I'm most proud of is before, literally 2 weeks before the lockdowns, we sat down and it's almost like as if we saw the writing on the wall and we said, look, if this happens, our only option is to move online. So what we did is we set up the infrastructure for Zoom and for Skype. We trained our teachers to be able to do online training.
We did courses working with children online.
That's right. We set ourselves up and then we did trial online days where all of, you know, my students and say two of the other teachers' students.
I forgot about that. We were smart.
Would get an email and say.
Let's say our Tuesday clients would be like.
We'd say, look, we don't know where this, you know, this COVID thing is going to go. So we're just going to do online classes today just so that if we have to be online, you're set up as well. Because that was the thing too. It's one thing to have the teachers all set up to have the infrastructure, but parents are busy. They got to download this. They got to check that. So we wanted for them to do that in an environment that it wasn't, you know, that or nothing.
We also made sure our teachers had our logo on their social media.
Yeah, there was branding.
They also had, you know, the background as well of their actual classrooms. So I know it sounds silly, but their actual classrooms would be behind because we took
photos of the rooms.
It's community. So we needed them to feel like they were still connected with our community. And also Sharon and I did lives every Friday. So on Friday we would do lives, we would sing, we would talk, and people would still see us and be able to communicate us to try and create something.
Emulate that community spirit. But, yeah, so when it did happen that all of a sudden there was snap lockdowns, we had already spent 2 weeks preparing everyone and it was as simple as, hey, you know that practice online session you did last week? That's what we're doing now. So we didn't have that thing of like all our students suddenly leaving, you know, especially now as parents ourselves enrolling in things, if things get too difficult on that end, it's very easy to be like, oh, too much effort. Yeah, that's not going to work. And certainly during coronavirus, when families had their own stresses and their own issues, we didn't want to make it more difficult. So the fact that we made it easy meant that we did retain a lot of our students.
Yeah. And we are very much so problem solvers. So in that moment, it was like challenge. Boom, we went straight into it. And also too, I think it recalibrated our passion as businesswomen and our passion for the school again. Because in that moment we could have gone, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
So it made us go, okay, again, we are not going to fail.
And again, you know, this is the thing about having, you know, we both had other options. We both have singing careers that, you know, we could probably sustain ourselves on. So the business and the school business is central because it's the thing that keeps us together, but also we've chosen it over and over and over again. And that was another point where we could have gone
like
too hard
child.
Basket. But it's just
child.
We've never gotten to that
our
point.
Our sister baby.
That's right. So, yeah, it did give up. Like Chrissy said.
Can't get rid of a kid. Doesn't matter how much they cause you trouble. That's the thing.
Yeah, and we got to – it was like a mammoth resetting of our goals. And it was actually fun in the end. I feel like when we – once we got rolling, I felt like we both were invigorated in the business.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good for us.
You need a little kick up the bottom.
Do you think that the business is now stronger because you've actually gone through and had to make changes to how you operate?
Yes,
but it's time to sit down and I feel like it's new time. Yep. So we have a lot of meetings to do. We actually do feel like now it's a new
cycle.
Day again
yep.
and
yep.
we need to just up our game again. So we're in that process. So you know.
Yeah, and again, it's not for any other. We just we can sense in us that, you know, that cycle of those goals that we set, I feel like we achieved them, and now it is a matter of resetting. What is the next year, two, three? What do we want next? And that is definitely where you come into it.
Yeah, so we'll jump on the website and book your available time.
Yes, we will.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. So, look, I have absolutely loved chatting with you today, and I always do, but particularly because you've just shared so much really good advice for anybody starting a business. And, you know, you've been pretty honest and upfront about some of the struggles that you've had and how you fix them. Always your passion comes through, which is just fantastic. And I've never had a conversation where I've walked away exhausted. I've just come around.
Are you sure about that?
I have absolutely been really, look, it's been inspiring to hear your journey, because even when you've come to me with a problem, we've always walked away with a plan and a solution, and I know you're going to implement it, and you do. And then, you know, we're still here. We're here today. We've gone through probably a very tough time, and you're here to set new goals. So thank you very much for your time today and
thank
for sharing
you, Paul.
So much that you have. And I really hope that more people listen. So if you're listening to this and you know somebody that should be getting this advice or should hear from somebody that has gone through the process of setting up a business from a very young age and has endured quite a lot of change in the business environment and conditions, but is thriving through that process, share this episode with them so that they can get a hold of this advice as well. Look, thank you again. It's always a pleasure. I've enjoyed myself today.
Yay.
Thanks, Paul. So
thanks,
we love
Sweeney.
Talking about ourselves. It really has been well today.
Absolutely loved it. Thank you very much for your time, and all the best. And look, we're looking forward to seeing you on stage again, and also seeing some of your students performing, because I've had the pleasure of hearing a number of students and in fact going to school music nights and hearing somebody sing and thinking, wow. And then I found out that they're actually one of your students, and I thought, double well. Yeah, it's great, and the joy that it brings to a lot of people. So thank you very much for your time today, but also for all of the enjoyment you've given to everybody in the past and will continue to do.
Thank you, Mr. Sweeney.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.